Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 1041 FM, KMOX.
Graybar Sports Open Live this evening on KMOX. Nate Gatter with you in for Matt Pauly. And we will be talking sports until 8 o'clock this evening. We got a fun show coming up. Producer Kyle Sixta is with me in our downtown studio. Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens men's basketball team, will be with us. He's coming up in just about 10 minutes here on KMOX. Talk about the Billikens 3-0 start. Certainly there's been some good back-to-back 100-point outings. First time in program history St. Louis has ever scored 100 points or more in back-to-back games, including a Chaffetz Arena record 66 points in the second half last night of a 199-66 win over Lindenwood. That's 109-66 over Lindenwood. But on the other hand, the Billikens turned the ball over 20 times last night, including 16 of them in the first half, and they have 50 turnovers in just three games. That puts them 325th in the country out of 350 odd teams that are in Division One. So there are certainly some things to work on there for the Billikens, and Josh Schertz has been very clear about that. He has not always loved the way the offense is run. There have been times when he has been had concerned about the selfishness. Certainly he's been concerned about the turnovers, but we saw this last year, and we'll talk about this, that his system is sometimes one of enough nuance that it's a little bit difficult for kids to pick it up right away. And unfortunately, well, fortunately or unfortunately, it doesn't really matter. For better or worse, we live in a world where there's tremendously more turnover now in college basketball rosters from year to year than there was, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago, let alone 20 or 30 years ago. And as a result, systems have to be within the ability of kids to pick them up more quickly, because you can't rely on veterans who are going to be in the program for 2, 3, 4 years necessarily, because you know, you just don't have very many of those guys. As it is right now, Robbie Avila is really the only guy who's been with Josh Schertz for more than 2 years, because he was with him at Indiana State and now in his second year with him here in St. Louis. So we'll talk to Coach Schertz about that, and maybe if he has made changes, if so, what kind of adjustments he's made, what's different about coaching a team in the portal era, especially as somebody who's known as more of an X's and O's guy who's a little bit sophisticated at the offensive end of the floor. We'll talk to Amy Markscores about the St. Louis Blues. Hockey Amy, as Kevin Wheeler said, at 6:35. That is not quite such a good start. Just 5 wins out of 16 for the Blues, though hardly insurmountable at this point. They are at the bottom in 8th place in the Central Division, but they're only 6 points behind the Blackhawks, who are in 3rd place, which is that last spot that would be guaranteed into the playoffs with the top 3 from the division. So certainly the Blues have not done enough yet to put themselves fully behind the 8-ball, but they have cut their work out for the remainder of the season at this point. Kind of, we talked about this a little bit in a baseball context at times with Kevin Wheeler, that it's really about how you've changed the rest of the season, right? Put it in a football context because there are fewer games, so it's easier. If you start the season, let's say you need to go 10-7 to make the playoffs in the NFL. If you start the season 3-0, well, now you only need to go 7-7. You know, that what you get for that work is you only need to be .500 the rest of the way to still make the playoffs, when before the season, thought you were going to have to win 10 out of 17 games. The Blues are kind of in that situation now. If you put a number on here's how many wins, here's how many points the Blues are going to need before the season, and therefore here's how many points per game they need, that points per game number has gone up considerably. There's no way around that. But it's also not at all insurmountable, only 16 games into the season. St. Louis City hired sporting director Corey Ray last week. He's going to be waiting on a work permit because he's Canadian, but we'll talk about him, the first new sporting director in St. Louis City history, the second overall. Lutz Pfannenstiel let go during this past season. I think it was in August that they made his departure official. Corey Ray, very successful as the general manager of Columbus Crew 2, the second team in Columbus, where he was the 2022 MLS Next Pro Executive of the Year, spent time as an assistant GM in Toronto, and then had kind of a more nebulous role most recently in Montreal, where he handled soccer-related stuff. He wasn't necessarily the final decision-maker. It was a little bit unclear exactly the technicalities of that role, but Ray now in St. Louis as the sporting director. Of course, a team still without a head coach. We'll talk about Ray's addition. We'll talk about the head coach search. We'll talk about contracts, guys coming back, guys not coming back, with Jen Cease in the second hour. We're going to talk about a few other things as well without guests, one of them being the two Cleveland Guardians relief pitchers, most notably all-star closer Emmanuel Clase, indicted on gambling-related charges this week in the Eastern District of New York, and kind of what that says about them, what kind of decision-making was going on there, and the changes that we are already seeing in baseball and that we're likely to see over the long term with a lot of these kind of gambling-related investigations unfolding around sports. Little Mizzou football as well. The Tigers coming off a 3-touchdown loss to Texas A&M over the weekend, a 3rd loss this season. Certainly it eliminates Mizzou for all intents and purposes from the college football playoff conversation, but at the same time, it's been a season full of adversity for Missouri this year, down to starting Matt Zollers, his first career start, the true freshman 3rd-string quarterback, because of the opener injury to Sam Horn, who would have been likely slated to be the backup, but was still at the time engaged in a quarterback competition with Bo Prabula, and then the dislocated ankle that Prabula suffered against Vanderbilt in Missouri's very disappointing loss down in Nashville a couple of weeks ago that certainly ended his regular season, likely ended his 2025 altogether, and is at least part of the reason Missouri lost to the undefeated Aggies of Texas A&M, but probably not the only reason. Pretty unlikely that even with a healthy Prabula, Missouri's overcoming that sort of deficit to win against A&M this weekend. All of that and more is coming up on Graybar Sports Open Line this evening. Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens men's basketball team, will be with us after the break on KMOX.
Tried to beat him into the front court, couldn't, and it scoops it up for Kellen Thames. Flight zero, takeoff, jam time!
Did he go reverse? Went reversed.
Well, he went up with the left hand and kind of spun as he got there.
That was our own Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. on the call here on KMOX during the 109-66 victory for St. Louis over Lindenwood last night. Kellen Thames back on the floor for the Billikens. Certainly everybody happy to see that. And we are happy to have the second-year head coach of the Bills, Josh Schertz, joining us now on Graybar Sports Open Line. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How's things with you?
We are great. Nate Gatter here in for Matt Pauly. Coach, let's start with Kellen Thames since he was the subject of that highlight. Obviously, there was so much uncertainty around his medical situation last year and when and even if he was going to be able to get back on the court. I mean, what a boost he has provided for you guys. His energy, his athleticism, his skill set. Kid's averaging 13 points in 17 minutes so far this year.
Yeah, you'll take that kind of production. I think he might be the most productive player in the country on a per-minute basis. Nine steals as well, you know, so averaging three steals a night, you know, a couple of assists a night. He just, you know, he's such a great kid. It was obviously really heartbreaking what happened, you know, last year. You know, four games in, I think he was averaging right around 15 points and 7.5 rebounds a game and playing great basketball. And then, you know, the cramp started with that Quinnipiac game in game five. He never really could recover. We shut him down in early January, but he was never the same, a shell of himself. So it's great to see him back, great to see him playing. I think the way this team is constructed really helps him because it gets him, you know, he can play, kind of empty his tank, get a rest, come back and do it again. And then just the way that the transition, he's just so elite, you know, on the open floor. And this team gives him an opportunity to, I think, really play to his strengths. And Kellen's a guy that, you know, special kid and a terrific player, great competitor. And, you know, there's no bigger roar in Chaffetz than when Kellen Thames is making a big-time play. It's always awesome to see.
Yeah, certainly. Do you see this as kind of his role for the rest of the year then, where he's probably playing in somewhat shorter spurts and emptying the tank and coming back in? Or do you think there's a possibility that he, as he gets built up, could return to something more along the lines of a typical starter's kind of rotation minutes where he could push into the mid-20s or beyond?
Yeah, I think it's TBD. You know, I think, you know, we're just kind of like taking as we go. You know, certainly the goal would be to get him up to his, you know, as many minutes as he can handle. You know, I think there's a capstone, you know, right now where like he hits his point and we got to get him out and then he can refuel and you know, redo his tank. And he's got to do a lot of things away from the court, you know, in terms of his eating and hydration, not just, you know, water, you know, but certainly making sure that he's got, you know, the right type of minerals and he's doing, you know, as a wide variety of things. He's got a lot on his plate to make sure he's getting himself ready to play. And we've got a whole team working with him to make sure that happens. But the hope is that, yeah, as the season goes on, that we can add more minutes to it, you know. And I think as the competition level raises, you know, that hopefully the more of Kellen Thames, always the better for the Billikens.
Speaking of guys who have been off to good starts, Amari McCautry, an ultra-efficient 23 points last night, a career high for him. He added 9 rebounds in the win over Lindenwood. What have you seen from McCautry so far that you liked?
Yeah, I just think he's taken a huge step forward in his growth. He's a more mature player. He's a more confident player. You know, he's a more, you know, a guy more, you know, in tune with what he needs to do to impact winning. He makes more winning plays. He's got such great feel around the basket. He's such a physical, confrontational driver. You know, he's got the tools to be a great rebounder. I think, you know, he shows it in spurts. Want to see him, you know, go into the glass offensively and defensively the way he did at times last night. But his ability to attack the rim, he can finish with either hand. He's got amazing touch in and around the basket. You know, he can pass. He does a good job of finding guys. You know, and then defensively, his versatility, guards 1 through 5. You know, not only is he 6'6", he's got a 7'1" wingspan and allows him to take on so many different challenges. And so he can touch the game in a lot of ways, similar to Kellen. There's this great versatility for him in terms of the ability to put his fingerprints on winning and do it on both ends of the floor and in a lot of different ways. And he's as versatile, kind of our Swiss Army knife on our team in terms of all the things he's doing. He's starting to shoot the ball a little more confident. So really excited about what he's bringing to the table. And certainly, you know, I think he's just scratching the surface of what he's going to be. He's got you know, there's a huge gap for him between, you know, where he is and what he's capable of. And as that gap gets bridged, man, can he, you know, do some special things.
You guys have been explosive in transition and at the offensive end of the floor so far this year. The back-to-back 100-point outings, first time in program history that's ever happened. 66 points in the second half against Lindenwood last night, a Chaffetz Arena record. You must be thrilled with how your guys are getting up and down the floor and the kind of entertaining brand of basketball that yields.
Yeah, I think our pace has been great. You know, we've got to be at times we got to bring the organization. And we talk about, you know, pace is great. But it's pace with organization, pace with discipline, pace with rhythm. That's really hard to guard. You know, I think last night, you know, first half we were wild with the ball. We had 43 points. We had 16 turnovers. Second half, we really, you know, we ran much more coherent offense, played every bit as fast. The goal is we want to play with unbelievable pace. And I think we've shown in all three games and in the two, you know, Iowa and Bradley before that, that pace is hard to keep up with over a 40-minute period. You know, I mean, maybe first half, but, you know, second half we're seeing our ability to get into guys' legs and we're getting some easier plays at the rim. And so, but it's continuing to play with that pace. I think it's an entertaining brand of basketball. People are seeing us, you know, in transition, our guys at all the time, you know, exception to maybe the end of the Chicago State game, have played exceptionally hard. They try to play the right way. And you know, it's just continuing as we move forward, you know, bringing that organization, bringing that discipline to the pace, which is going to allow us to really function at our highest level offensively. That's the thing with this team, you know, you're most excited about, at least from my seat, is, you know, I think we're kind of like Amari. We're just scratching the surface of how good we can be, particularly on that end of the floor. And I think there's a lot more in terms of growth and development for us to get where we're capable of being.
You alluded to the organization. Obviously, the turnovers are part of that. 20 of them last night, 16 in the first half, 50 over the first three games. What do you see as the most important points of emphasis to kind of combine those things and continue with some of that urgency, much the way you did in the second half, to your point, with only four turnovers and 66 points in the second half? How do you play at high speed while also taking care of the basketball and being organized?
Yeah, it's obviously the most elusive thing, right? It's you know, if it was easy, everybody do it. You know, I think that's the piece of understanding spacing, understanding we don't have to, you know, if it's not there, being okay. A lot of our turnovers last night were, you know, we drove the ball into the teeth of defense. We could have got off the ball earlier and kicked it. We kept trying to go in the teeth of defense. Some of it is, you know, guys trying to hit home runs, you know, trying to make spectacular plays. Understanding that singles will do it, understanding that, you know, as we push the ball and if the defense is back and set, then it's an opportunity to get to our motion offense and get to our flow and work the defense and break them down. And there's a difference, like I said, you know, being fast, being careless, being fast, being reckless, then, you know, there's no point in pace. You know, the pace is only really effective when you have those, you know, the organizational piece and the discipline piece, and, you know, discipline and taking care of the ball, discipline in your shot selection. And so I think that's, you know, that's our big challenge. We got to go back to work. Part of it too, I think, you know, a little bit is, you know, as we get into playing, the competition level raises. I thought our most coherent offense of the season so far was in our first game against Iowa. And mainly because Iowa, you know, we couldn't just, you know, run the ball down their backs. They were able to get back and get set, and they made us work. We still scored a ton of points, but we got it more through layering our offense. And I think, you know, as the competition level raises starting Saturday night, I think our ability to layer offense, our ability to get to next actions and really work into the clock a little bit is going to be challenged. And, you know, I'm excited to see our guys respond, and I think they will. I think we have the tools to be an elite offensive team. I mean, obviously we're averaging 103 points, but I think we can do some special things against high-level competition. I think the competition is going to help take us there.
Billikens head coach Josh Schertz is with us on KMOX. Just a couple more for you, Coach. You mentioned the motion offense and getting into it in a half court. You know, you're known for as a guy who does pretty sophisticated things at the offensive end of the floor. How much has the transfer portal and the fact that you have a lot of new players every year, and that's just going to be the world we're living in for the foreseeable future, how does that change what you do offensively or the way you have to teach it, knowing that you just have fewer guys in your huddle on day one of practice who already know what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think, you know, the when you have, you know, we call it corporate knowledge, but you got guys in your program, you have continuity, I think it can allow you to you still don't, you know, you still go back to basics, but you can advance your curriculum much faster, right? Because guys understand, you know, what they're doing, and so you're not skipping steps, but you can move through stuff quicker. Now you're still, you know, starting at the same base point, but you got to take longer to move through it. You know, you're not getting to the advanced curriculum stuff till later on in the season. But you're seeing, like, I think, you know, that's the key part here for us, you know, is our ability to hopefully over time retain guys. You got to you know, you got to recruit a really high level. You got to develop the players you have, and you got to retain them. And when you look at year two, Amari McCautry, year two, Kellen Thames, you know, you're seeing these guys make these jumps. And I think it's important, you know, in that to see, like, these guys over time are, you know, vastly improved. Kluwan is a vastly improved player, though he's redshirting. You know, so we're seeing guys make that jump. But, you know, I think you have to, you know, you have to meet the team where it is. This team's strengths are totally different. You know, I've got to certainly coach it in a way that, you know, accentuates this group's strengths, minimizes and mitigates the vulnerabilities, and tries to put us in the best position on both ends of the floor to play basketball that works for this group, which will be totally different than what worked for last year's group, because last year's group was obviously its own separate entity. So you certainly got to, you know, can't advance the curriculum as quickly, but if you have some high IQ guys, they can maybe pick it up. And then part of it is, you know, again, just making sure that we're doing the right things, and we'll continue to layer things on as the season goes. And so we're probably not nearly as advanced as we were in my D2 days. We had everybody for 5 years, and a lot of my guys were third and fourth year guys, but we're certainly, hopefully, by the end of the year going to get there.
Last one for you, kind of big picture, because you mentioned that preseason scrimmage against Iowa, and that certainly is a game that got a lot of attention around social media circles when the score was reported. Maybe in part because at that stage of the year, everybody's looking for any morsel, and in part because this is a schedule that's true for a lot of kind of really high-end mid-majors like St. Louis and, you know, the Daytons and the high-end A-10 teams, where it's hard to get non-conference games against high-major opponents, right? You guys are going to have one against either Minnesota or Stanford, the second game in Palm Desert the day after Thanksgiving. But other than that, there aren't any non-conference games against power conference opponents. How frustrating is it right now? Because we've heard plenty of coaches around the country talk about this. Being a team that's often where those A-10 teams are, somewhere between maybe, you know, 40 and 70 in the net rankings, those high-end A-10 teams, trying to get themselves games against power conference opposition where those schools are saying, you know, I'm not sure we're seeing the net rating upside of playing you guys.
Yeah, it's you know, obviously extremely frustrating. You know, Ben and I, Ben McCollum at Iowa and I are good friends going back to our D2 days. And, you know, Ben was happy to come here and scrimmage us, would not have been happy to come here and play us and or play us in a neutral. You know, we've talked about, you know, we would certainly be open to neutral game or home and homes with, you know, Missouri or any of the teams, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, Kansas State, you name it, you know, we'd do it. But it is, you know, what they're trying to do, which I understand, it doesn't mean it's good for the game. But, you know, the every league is trying to figure out ways to maximize their bids. And the high majors, if they can, their job is to, you know, if the SEC is getting 14, well, the Big Ten wants to get 15 bids. And, you know, the Big 12 wants to get every team in. And the ACC and the Big East. And, you know, how do we do that? Well, the best way in their minds to do that is to, you know, to freeze out the leagues like ours, like the Mountain West, you know, like the American, where you got these, you know, I don't know where we fit in that. I don't know if it's high major, minus, mid major plus, who knows. But as best they can, freeze those leagues out, and you do that by not playing. And the way the net works, and I think that's part of like where it has to be looked at, is, you know, your best pathway to getting bids, at large bids, is to play quad one and quad four games. And you got to win your quad four games by a significant amount. And then you got to, you know, split your basically your quad one games. And then, you know, you go to your league. And so we're not getting those opportunities at the same level that it was. People say, well, you know, years ago they played this team and this team and this team. Well, you know, years ago we didn't have the net. And years ago is not today. And so I'd love to see them look at, you know, recalibrating the tournament, recalibrating the metrics. You know, we're going to try to keep working. Part of our deal is we've got to get good enough that those teams want to play us, whether that's in Chaffetz or neutral, right? We got to get good enough that people look at us and go, man, that's a quality game. So Marquette, you know, obviously I'm good friends with Shaka or Dusty May at Michigan or Nate Oates at Alabama, guys I'm close with, go, hey, you know, we want to play you. And we want to play you, not just, you know, buy you to come here, but we want to play you on a neutral or in a home-and-home series or a two-for-one series. We go there twice. You know, we'd be open to all that. But, you know, the high majors are doing the best they can to freeze those teams out, trying to stay in the quad four, quad one, and play other power four teams, other power five teams, so they don't put themselves in jeopardy of, you know, of losing. And so if that Iowa game was a regular season game, you know, that obviously, you know, would be a much bigger difference than, you know, than it being, you know, behind closed doors. And so we saw it when I was at Indiana State in the NIT. You know, we started off with SMU, Minnesota, Cincinnati at home, and we won all three of those games. And, you know, there's a reason those teams don't go on the road and play.
I think that's probably right. Coach, we appreciate your time and your candor as always. Thanks a lot for being here.
I appreciate it, Nate. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
You too. That's Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens men's basketball team. And I will say the last bit that, you know, and I'm not putting any words in his mouth. I think even if Coach Schertz thought this, he probably would be too classy to say it. There are a lot of folks in the high major conferences in Division I. This is administrators. This is coaches who have forgotten what college basketball and who have forgotten even what the NCAA tournament is about, right? Who will tell you to your face that the NCAA tournament should be expanded and that we should be getting more high major teams in and that the goal in the NCAA tournament should be to get those little teams out as fast as possible so that we can play real basketball, that that's what people want. And it's just wrong. I think those that's what they want. I don't think they're lying. I don't think they're doing it deliberately to be nefarious, but they're just wrong. And a lot of people, unfortunately, at the top end of college basketball are just completely out of touch with what makes college basketball great, what in particular makes the NCAA tournament great for the average college basketball fan, and maybe even more importantly, when you get to the tournament, the casual sports fan who doesn't love college basketball, pays a little attention, and then watches in March, because everybody watches in March, because March Madness is maybe, outside of the Super Bowl, the most quintessentially American sporting event. And what makes it so great is that the minnows can beat the sharks, right? And the sharks just don't even want to be in the same water as the minnows anymore. And that's really, really frustrating. So hopefully we can find ways to take steps in the right direction. Josh Schertz with us, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens, off to a high-scoring 3-0 start. We're late for Amy Mark's scores, but she works here, so she can't really say anything about it. Amy Mark's scores talking St. Louis Blues after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews. All on the app. Download today.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates, so you can reach the exact people you you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Nate Gatter back with you on Graybar Sports Open Line in for Matt Pauly this evening. And after we talked to Josh Schertz, head coach of the St. Louis Billikens, about his team's excellent 3-0 start, we turned to the St. Louis Blues off to very much a not excellent start. Just 5 wins from their first 16 games, 8 losses in regulation, 3 in overtime. And that brings us to Amy Markscores, our own Amy Markscores of KMOX. You hear her with Chris Ranji during the daytime here on KMOX, and she moonlights, I was told, according to Kevin Wheeler, as Hockey Amy, her alter ego. How much truth is there to that?
There's an enormous amount of truth. It might be completely true, Nate.
That was my feeling, is that he seemed like he was telling the truth. And she's angry, Hockey Amy, because we kept her waiting about 5 minutes later than we were supposed to. So God knows what we're headed to. The Blues dropped the puck tonight in, what, about 15 minutes, maybe a little later than that, since the NHL refuses to start on time, against the Calgary Flames, the only team in the Western Conference with fewer points than the Blues so far this year. Can you kind of walk me through how the Blues have ended up in this situation where they have certainly underplayed expectations so far?
Well, we don't have a ton of time for that. No, I mean, you know, the Blues have put themselves in this position because, as Coach Jim Montgomery has said, one, they weren't showing up to play. They were starting the games late, in the sense that why they came out of the gate flat, I don't know. I mean, I don't mean just coming out of the season flat, but the beginning of the game, the first puck drop, to the second period, the third period, and so forth. Yeah, they were coming out flat. Or they would come out with a good start, score a couple of goals, and then somehow sit back on their heels. And, you know, when you're looking at this team and the way they've had kind of an uninspired performance for most of the games. You have some good victories. Their win against the Edmonton Oilers, they looked great and reminds you what the ceiling could be. But they've just played poorly, where at times they're scrambling in their defensive zone. At times they weren't connecting in the neutral zone with passes, so they couldn't break out. They had a lot of neutral zone turnovers. In the offensive zone, they couldn't get pucks through to the net. And so I guess if we can focus on some of the self-inflicted wounds that led to the objectively wrong call when it came to goalie interference in that last game against the Seattle Kraken, when the Blues gave up their lead with a half a second left in the game in the third period, which of course all kind of triggered all of us who watched them lose Game 7 against the Winnipeg Jets in the playoffs. But you go back to that half a second when I believe there was goalie interference. I won't break it down, but it checked all the boxes. But the thing is, that's not why they lost the game. They lost the game because of failed clearing attempts. There were multiple times when the Blues in their own defensive zone could have cleared the puck, and they didn't. Jim Montgomery brought up their offensive zone blue line turnovers. Well, you hang out in the offensive zone a few seconds longer, then it doesn't come down to the wire in that sense with the Calgary Flames able to sustain pressure in the D zone in 6-on-5. And so, you know, it's little things. It's, like I said, messy breakouts, neutral zone turnovers. I'm not sure why, Nate, that they came out so strong in that first period and really had a dud of a second. And then in the third, played even but gave it up.
You mentioned being a little bit triggered by that goal with half a second. I was actually watching that game from the KMOX studio in the bowels of Busch Stadium, and was, when the goal went in, was speaking live on the Cardinals radio network about something unrelated, you know, I'm talking about the Cardinals, and had to not react to that goal going in, and it was very hard. I mean, I probably the closest I've ever come to swearing on network radio, and I'm not saying I was right on the edge, but it could have slipped out. So, you know, certainly we all feel that. Let's look ahead then to tonight, and obviously an opportunity playing against at home against a team that has just 4 wins so far this year out of 17. This must be the kind of game where, again, you're testing them against how can they start then, right? You want to see a really strong first period and asserting themselves right away rather than messing around in a game that should be winnable.
I mean, you do, right? Obviously, you want to have that good, strong start. The problem is they've had a couple of good starts, and then they manage a way to give up that lead. It was just a few games ago they were up 4-0, and they lost. And so I think it goes back to this whack-a-mole where if the fans don't have confidence in the Blues' ability to win, the Blues actually don't have confidence at times on the ice. The Blues have said it's not the goaltending, right? They're like, we have left our goaltenders out to dry. And in many ways they have. They haven't given up a lot of chances in the defensive zone, but the chances they've given up have been grade A scoring chances. You might stop, let's see, what team was it where just a few games ago? I think they didn't let up a shot on goal for 11 minutes straight. But then the next 3 shots, one was an odd man rush and 2 were breakaways. I mean, and those can really come back to haunt you. And yes, the goaltending has not been great. Joel Hofer will say that. Jordan Binnington will say that. We know what their ceilings can be, and we've kind of seen the floor. We saw Hofer start to turn that around. We need Binnington to turn it around. We know he can. We saw who he can be when he won the Cup. We saw who he could be when he won the Four Nations tournament last winter. So I say that because some of these points, these pinch points where you've seen things going wrong for the Blues, they really need to tie them all up. Because if you fix 3 of the 4, that 4th one can still come to bite you, and it has in several of their losses.
Amy, we appreciate it as always. Certainly an opportunity tonight. The Blues have beaten the Flames 7 times in a row and in 16 of their last 19 meetings. So if they're going to turn it around, why not start tonight, huh?
You have to start tonight, Nate.
Got to start sometime, that's for sure.
Against the very worst team at home, you have to win tonight, full stop.
Amy Markscores of KMOX with us talking Blues. Thanks a lot, Amy.
Thanks, Nate.
You can hear Amy with Chris Raji every day right here on KMOX. We'll take a break. When we return, we'll wrap up this first hour talking a little bit about the St. Louis City app introducing AI. If you didn't see that, we'll touch on that. And then we'll get ahead into the second hour. We'll talk real St. Louis City with Jen Cease, Mizzou football, Cleveland Guardians pitchers indicted, all that and more. Sports Open Line here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Once again, Nate Gatter on KMOX filling in for Matt Pauley on Graybar Sports Open Line this evening. If you missed anything from this first hour, including our visits with Amy Markscores talking St. Louis Blues and with the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens men's basketball team, Josh Schertz, talking about his 3-0 ball club coming off a 109-66 win over Lindenwood. You can go back and hear that on the free Odyssey app, where you can always hear us streaming live. You can also use that talkback feature to get in touch. You can tweet us, you can call us, you can comment on our streams. You can do anything you want to get involved in the conversation. That conversation now has taken us to St. Louis City's app, which you've probably used if you've gone to a game. It's a place where they have tickets. You can order food. You can get directions around the stadium, what have you. Last week, St. Louis City announced the addition of ACE, an ambient AI engine, to the city app. And this would be pretty innocuous, right? Everybody's getting into AI. That's the thing that we all want to do to prove that we're hip and technologically advanced and whatever. Except that this is coming from the most environmentally friendly club in St. Louis that can't stop talking about how environmentally friendly they are. Environmental damage from AI is difficult to quantify. But scientists at University of California, Riverside, estimated each 100-word AI prompt is estimated to use approximately 1 bottle of water. As a result, AI data centers consume millions or even billions of gallons of valuable fresh water every year, depending on the size of the data center. Certainly, collectively, they consume billions and billions. And this is coming from St. Louis City, a club that has touted its Goal Zero sustainability mission that commits to zero waste at Energizer Park, eliminating single-use plastics in their food and beverage packaging, even using low-flow toilets to conserve water. This is coming from St. Louis City, the club that offered to sell you a team mug from Yeti. By the way, the capital O, official sustainability partner of the club, for $80 for the stated purpose of reducing waste. What is the use case for this AI? City already has an app. Who do the city marketing people think is the audience for this? The audience that supposedly uses a team app wants it to tell them where to buy food and where to find a bathroom and who will be in the starting 11, but who doesn't know how to click a button to find that information and instead has to type a full sentence in to ask an AI. It is not quicker. It is not easier. It is not more intuitive for a less than tech-savvy older fan. It is just blindly following a vapid corporate buzzword to seem cutting edge. And St. Louis City, of all teams, should be ashamed. Second hour after this on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Graybar Sports Open Line continues on this Tuesday evening. Nate Gatter back with you in for Matt Pauly this evening. Kevin Wheeler will have you tomorrow. I'll be back with you for Thursday night. Graybar Sports Open Line. If you missed anything, you can go back and hear it on the free Odyssey app. Josh Schertz, Amy Markscores joined us in the first hour talking Billikens and Blues, respectively. In the second hour, we're going to talk to Jen Cease here in just about 10 minutes on St. Louis City, hiring new sporting director Corey Ray, as well as some of the other events going on around the club. We'll also talk some Mizzou football later on in this second hour as well. Nate Gatter, producer Kyle Sixta back with you here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Mentioned the Cleveland Guardians relief pitchers who were indicted this week. Those indictments were announced on Sunday by the Eastern District of New York. Luis L. Ortiz and most notably Emmanuel Clase of the Cleveland Guardians. Clase, a three-time All-Star, two-time American League Reliever of the Year. Clase, in particular, provided lots of material, non-public information to some betting co-conspirators who actually placed the bets, who were reportedly from the native Dominican Republic of both Clase and Ortiz. In Clase's instance, the information in total combined with the more significant allegations having to do with the essentially purposely throwing balls in order to help those bettors win bets totaled about $400,000 of winnings for the bettors through those fraudulent wagers. Clase would, and Ortiz would, although toward the end, he really came into it just as they were getting caught, which is a bad time to come into, as they say in The Wire, a criminal effing conspiracy, which is exactly what was happening between these guys. So Clase would relatively routinely, in April, May, and June, according to the indictment, purposely throw either a ball or purposely throw a ball that was either a fastball or a breaking ball so that the bettors could bet on it to be a ball or in some cases could parlay the bet, meaning they would bet on it to be a ball and to be above or below a certain velocity. And you can bet quite a great deal of money on these particular pitches, and he would always do it on the first pitch of an inning, making it easy for the bettors to know it was coming and to have time to get their bets in and that sort of thing. Already, Major League Baseball has responded to this sportsbook in coordinating with major sportsbooks in the country to limit pitch wagers to $200 at most, meaning no one could bet more than $200 on a specific pitch. So presumably now this would not be worth enough money. Although it sounds like Class A was getting relatively low. There weren't particular bribe figures thrown out on the pitches that Class A was throwing, but we did get them in the indictment relating to Ortiz's pitches that Ortiz was getting $5,000 a couple of different times, and Class A was getting seven for helping to set it up. So, or once it was five, and once they both got seven, I should say. Once they both got five, once they both got seven. So for those two pitches, $12,000. Even if Class A did this another dozen times, another two dozen times, you know, the bettors, if they won $400,000, they're only going to give him so big a cut of that, right? They got to get the majority of it to make it worth what they're doing. So, but let's say at the absolute maximum, Class A got half of the overall winnings, and he got $200,000. Emmanuel Clase just threw away his entire career and quite possibly his freedom because they're both facing up to 65 years in federal prison. Now, it's very unlikely they would serve anything close to that In most cases in the federal system, defendants will get plea deals because it's very rare, as Chauncey Billups is finding out, as Terry Rozier might find out, although his situation is a little bit different. It's very rare for federal prosecutors to bring charges they aren't 100% confident in. Normally, it's about strategy of plea deal and exchanging information more so than it is making some kind of argument at a trial and getting an acquittal. There are rare circumstances, but it is very rare in federal court that a criminal defendant goes to court and is acquitted. So we can, these guys are innocent until proven guilty. The prosecutors themselves would tell you that. But it is very unusual that federal prosecutors don't get their guys post-indictment in this kind of a situation. So it is enormously likely that Emmanuel Clase threw away his career. It is more likely than not, certainly, that he will serve some time in prison in order to make at most a couple $100,000. Probably not even that. But let's say low six figures, somewhere in there, is what he probably made out of this. He's made almost $15.4 million in his career. He made $4.5 million this year. He had an additional $8 million in money that was guaranteed to him, now no longer will be. Difficult to estimate exactly when he would have been a free agent and what his earnings would have been because the Guardians had two team options on the back end. So it was $6 million for next year, and then there were two additional team options. And the reason I say it was $8 million guaranteed is because to buy out those options, they would have owed him $2 million. And those options weren't even set in value because they have to do with performance incentives. But he would have made at least $8 million more. And those options likely would have been picked up barring some kind of catastrophic arm injury because Class A has been the best relief pitcher in all of baseball over the last few years. And they would have been worth at least $10 million a year. So it's safe to say that he had, in close to guaranteed money, another $25 to $30 million coming over the next 3 years. And then he would have been a free agent still in his early 30s and likely to command, if he pitched anywhere close to this level, a probably $100 million-ish dollar contract, give or take, right? Depending on the number of years. If he were a free agent this offseason, it'd be at least $100 million that he would command because he'd command at least a five-year contract, potentially longer than that. So we're talking about a guy here who, at an absolute guaranteed minimum, threw away $8 million. In likelihood, threw away between $100 and $150 million, maybe even more, to get most likely $100,000 to $200,000 in illegal bribes to throw first pitch balls. Some of the most damning evidence, by the way, if you didn't read the indictment or the stories about it, is when Class A threw a slider in the dirt on a first pitch to Andy Páez of the Dodgers, who swung at it. And one of the alleged co-conspirator bettors, who supposedly lost $4,000 on that pitch, texted Class A some unsavory emojis, basically saying what a shame that was. And Class A responded with apparently a crying dog face. So he was very disappointed, although this is a game where he didn't pitch badly and Cleveland won the game. So unclear why he would have been so sad, unless obviously the feds know what they're talking about. And Class A did, in fact, do that stuff. So pretty, I think it's just kind of sad and pathetic. You wonder about what it says about the future of sports gambling in this country, which I think was a big mistake, and I think some folks are realizing that. And the response you get, usually from people who are thousands of dollars in deep with these various sports books, is that, well, folks would just do it under the table, right? Like, this makes it actually better because folks are getting caught because we have regulated sports books. And in some certain instances, that might be true. When you're talking about, like, college basketball and the mob, right? Because we had instances where the mob was getting involved in trying to fix college basketball games well before sports gambling was legal in the United States. So maybe you can make that argument in certain instances. In the vast majority of instances, this is people who never would be betting with an illegal mob bookie or finding some offshore sports book to gamble at. The reason they're getting into sports gambling and the reason they're then getting down this road that leads to fraud and criminality is because it's legal now. And so it's right in front of them because it's advertised all the time on billboards, because there are official sports books of Major League Baseball because the St. Louis Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs and every sports team and their mother want to build some kind of mixed use casino sports book facility where they can make even more money off of you. Right, this is why it's grown. We were not talking about it in this way before sports gambling was legal in the United States. And it's not because a bunch of Emmanuel Class A's were out there spiking sliders for the mob. Right? That wasn't happening. Because an illegal sports book offshore or through the mob is not giving you odds per pitch. They're not saying, yeah, you can bet $4,000 with me on Emmanuel Class A to throw a first pitch ball. Because if you're looking for a mob bookie to bet on Emmanuel Class A to throw a first pitch ball, it's because you know he's going to throw a first pitch ball. The only reason you'd be doing that is because you've rigged it. Right? No mob bookie's going to take that. And in fact, he's not going to take any of your other action. And if you call him again, he's going to break your legs. So that's going to regulate itself. You don't need to worry about it. Unless it's the mob actively doing it. And I don't think they're in that business quite as much anymore. I think that's just not really what they're doing the way they might have been before. So all of that is to say, it's just a real shame. And hopefully we can get away from it. Already MLB is taking some action. I think in the not too distant future, we're going to see sports books completely, whether they're forced to or do it voluntarily, we're going to see them completely eliminate individual player prop bets in college sports because those kids are just too exposed to getting manipulated for relatively small bribes. It's too easy to get to kids who just don't make millions of dollars. It should be hard to get to an Emmanuel Class A. Apparently it wasn't. It should be hard. It's much easier to get to a low major college basketball player. So this is not the end. This is not the end. It's probably just the beginning, and we're probably headed toward a long, dragged-out fight of trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, and I'm not sure what that's going to look like, especially now that not only sports books and betting companies, but also sports leagues and sports television networks and sports teams have so much money wrapped up in sports gambling. It's going to be very difficult to put that toothpaste all the way back in the tube, and I think ultimately that's to the detriment of competitive integrity and our sporting society. We'll talk to Jen Cease on St. Louis City. That's coming up after this. You're listening to Graybar Sports Open Line on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews. All on the app. Download today.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates, so you can reach the exact people you you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Graybar Sports Open Line continues on KMOX 104.1 FM, 1120 AM, and on the free Odyssey app, on Twitter, on Facebook, we're on YouTube, wherever else you're streaming KMOX. You can get in on the conversation by tweeting us, by commenting, by calling 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. Kyle Sixta is standing by to take your calls, but not for the next couple of minutes because Jen Cease is with us of our own KMOX and all over. Speaking of somebody who's on all your social media pages, Jen Cease certainly is, and all of her St. Louis City coverage. And she's going to let us in on a little bit of what's been going on in the early offseason for City. Jen, how you doing?
Soccer never ends, Nate.
It never does. In this case, I mean, in MLS circles, it kind of feels like it literally never does. Because, I mean, we just got through the first round of the playoffs. And you and I are pretty deep into St. Louis City offseason storylines already. So let's talk, first of all, about the biggest news for the moment, which is Corey Ray, the new sporting director for St. Louis City, former MLS Next Pro Executive of the Year in 2022 when he was with Columbus Crew 2, been an assistant GM in Toronto. He had kind of a nebulous soccer role with Montreal most recently, where he was very much involved in the high-end workings of the club, but also was not the final decision maker. He talked about that some of the press conference. Let's start big picture. What were your biggest takeaways or impressions of your first time hearing him speak at that press conference?
You know, it was really great being there, and boy, is it really a departure from Lutz, I think. If you've gotten to know Lutz Spanish deal over the years, and I know, Nate, you had known Lutz early on, Corey is just a very different personality. I think he... just getting to know him, a different kind of way he speaks to the media, at least so far. And it seems like a little bit of a different approach he might try to have when it comes to scouting. Now, he didn't, of course, you know, lay all his cards on the table. I think he'd only really been in St. Louis for like 3 days and had to go back, of course, across the border to Canada. And he hasn't gotten his family settled or anything like that. But he did talk a little bit about wanting to take a look closely at data analytics and making sure those were making a big part of the decision making. And I'm not saying that Lutz didn't do that, but I think Lutz also really weighed heavily on the eye test and fit of personality and things like that. So it'll be really interesting to see what Corey Ray does in terms of how he looks at who's going to make a good fit at whatever particular position for the team, and also given how the team's going to play in their next style. Is it going to be City's first debut as a team? Is it going to be that 2.0 that Lutz Spanisdiel wanted to have? So it'll be interesting to see. I think we've only seen the beginning of Corey Ray.
You know, it's interesting. I hadn't even really thought about it until you were comparing, you know, his personality and the way he was dealing with the media to Lutz. The other element of that is that he's dealing with kind of a very different media than Lutz Spanisdiel was dealing with when he first came into the role, which was a media that kind of reflected a city and a fan base so excited to have a team. And Fanningsteel was coming in, but well before the opening kickoff of the first team, and then into that first season when it was just all sunshines and rainbows out of the gate. Now Corey Ray's kind of coming into a fan base, into a city, and to, as a result, a media environment where folks are maybe a little bit more jaded now after a couple of unsuccessful seasons, maybe a little bit more skeptical of what they're hearing from a St. Louis City microphone behind a podium, right? So he's having to grapple with that, which was not his own doing. He didn't create this situation, but he's coming into one where folks are a little bit disappointed and frustrated.
There, you got a really great point there. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. You know, Lutz Spanisdiel came in when just the city was, you remember, just so excited that we got a team now. Finally, we deserved a team for so many years. We are the soccer capital of the United States. Let's go. And what a crazy first year we had, right? And then you had the disappointing second year and the disappointing third year, and it just kind of got worse from there. So, yeah, Corey Ray is walking into an environment where he's got to prove something up, much like, you know, when David Critchley took over or John Hackworth took over as interims, they've got to kind of prove up to a jaded audience. Now, as I understand, our St. Louis media, Midwest media, is rather friendly, maybe compared to European media or the coast media. So I didn't get any impressions there, but there definitely were some already, you know, really good questions about from the media about how are you going to take this approach given this crazy first season. But the fact that there were improvements to be made, and we certainly saw those places that got hidden in City's first year. Like City didn't always play great under Bradley Carnell. We won in that first year, but the style of soccer had holes in it, and it became exposed in year two and year three. So how is Corey going to make sure he fills those gaps? And how is he really going to work with utilizing staff and filling staff roles? He made a point several times in this press conference to say that he's not going to be doing this alone. You know, he's not a one-man band. He's not going to do this alone. He sees some gaps, I think, in some of the decision-making process when it comes to scouting locally, scouting internationally, scouting domestically, and how you put those together and how the City team as a whole. He didn't say specifically who, but I'm thinking he's talking about staffing as well as maybe up to the front office of how they work and communicate together. So I think he's looking to make some pretty broad changes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly how that dynamic unfolds. John Hackworth is expected to stay with the club as technical director, even though he was reportedly one of the finalists, along with Brentford technical director Lee Dykes, the Premier League, who Corey Ray beat out in the late stages of the process to get the City sporting director job. You mentioned Bradley Carnell, who, of course, has now been MLS Manager of the Year in Philadelphia this season. We talk about John Hackworth. We talk about David Critchley, who have had their turns as interim head coaches of City at different points. Hackworth a couple of seasons ago and Critchley this year. And all of that leads toward the first big Corey Ray decision, which is who is going to be St. Louis City's manager going into next season. The good news is City beat their timeline pretty considerably on getting a sporting director in. So Corey Ray is not quite as far behind the eight ball as maybe you might have expected at the time that Lutz Fanenschiel was let go, because it looked like things were going to get really messy with those timelines. At the same time, City have been without a permanent manager since May. So this is, we're getting into a long absence here without a permanent manager, and he's going to be coming into a search that presumably is at least sort of underway. What impression did you get about what he's going to prioritize in a manager?
You know, he wouldn't really get really granular when it came to, you know, style of play or what he specifically wants, but he did talk about the fact that it's got to be somebody he can work with. So it's got to be somebody that can communicate with him, that can work with him, cooperate with him, that understands what City, and this is going to also include Diego Gigliani. And to your point that you just made, you know, Diego has taken a lot of heat for being involved in saying, you know, first earlier in the season, like, hey, I'm not really going to make those sporting kind of on the field decisions. Well, when we lose Lutz Fanenschiel, Diego Gigliani is doing exactly that. So I think it's good. It gets him a heat off Diego's back in terms of having somebody there that can make those choices. But when it comes to a coach, I think it's going to be who fits the style of play that they decide to do and who can make those decisions, who can work with the players that Corey wants to bring in. So I think they're going to have a shared vision. Now, I'm also going to say, I've made no bones about the fact that I'm a Critch fan. I like David Critchley. I like John Hackworth. I think, you know, if he could work well with either one of those, I think that they would do a great job. David Critchley's already got the team. He's already won the locker room. He's already knows the players believe that he will work with them. So it'll be interesting. I would love to be behind closed doors to see if Critch could work with somebody like Corey Ray and see if he actually has a chance at that. But I think it's going to be, can this be somebody that can work with me on these decisions and then utilize the players I recruit and collect for the club the way we envision?
Yeah, and some of that recruiting, if you will, has already been done with Roman Berkey signing that contract extension as a designated player that was announced in that final home game. Really cool announcement, the way they did it, announcing it for the fans there in the stadium rather than initially on social media, as would normally be the case. So that takes up a DP spot, but still, City have a pretty good amount of roster flexibility. There's expected to be a decent amount of turnover. I would think that's an attractive situation for a new sporting director to come into, knowing that he's not going to be locked into a whole lot of roster decisions that are kind of hangovers from a previous regime?
Yeah, I would think so. If you're somebody that really wants to dig your hands in and get dirty, if you will, that I think, and it seems like he likes that. He really wants to figure things out. He talked about being a process person, that if there's a process to have, he's always noodling on how to make it better. So I think if you, the more Corey has to work on, the impression I got is the happier he might be. Now, as you know, Nate, as well as I do, time is not on City's side. Time is not on anybody's side right now. They've already been a little bit behind the eight ball. They've got to work with the players that they currently have. We know Ben Munt is returning with the team as a backup goalkeeper for Roman Berkey. I think that was a great choice. But we have a lot of other players that City has to decide on, contracts that we just simply haven't heard on. So I think there's a lot for him and Diego. And maybe if they're already talking to a coach, who knows, got to figure about the current players. And then they need that time to be able to go out and get players and do so quickly. I think David Critchley made a really good point earlier in this season, especially as he was trailing off towards the end of it, of saying having a solid preseason is so, so important. It was really hard for Hack. It was really hard for Critch to come in as interims and try to be successful when you didn't have preseason lay the ground. So I think the sooner the City can not only get their coach in place, but start really deciding on these players as well, only bodes best. They've got to get started sooner than later, and it can't be after January 1.
Jen Cease of KMOX is with us here talking St. Louis City. Jen, one more for you as you're talking about kind of where we're at in the offseason and what's to come. This is putting you on the spot a little bit, but it's as open-ended as you want it to be, whether it's one of those returning player or existing players but who are on expiring contracts who you want to bring back, whether it's an area of the field that you want to see them bolster with players from the outside, whether it's just something stylistically you want to see them do or get back to. What would be your top priority or two that comes to mind if you were in Corey Ray's position and if you had that, maybe even if you were in Carolyn Kindle's position and you had the overarching authority to do whatever you wanted with St. Louis City this offseason, what would you be prioritizing?
Well, as you know, I've talked about it before, I like speed. I don't think City's fast enough as a team as a whole. Do we have a couple, like, you know, Zhang? Do we have a few fast players, Thomas Tatlin? Sure, we have a little bit of that, but I think we could definitely use just speed all around. So I'd like to see a speedier team that's threatening, you know, that make me cringe like Denny Bouanga does for LAFC when they get on the ball. You're like, oh, no. I want to see more of that for City. So that's kind of an overall skill or a physical attribute I'd like to see. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to returning players, I'd really like to see some of the original spine there. It probably won't be everybody, and I don't know what Edward Lubin's role is going to be or what his capability is going to be. I totally understand his family situation, but having somebody like Adu come back would be amazing. And I'm a Klaus fan. I know not everybody is always happy with the way Klaus performs and putting the balls in the back of the net himself, but I still think he's very City identity, and I would love to see Klaus be back with the team.
Well, all I heard is you said Denny Bouanga, and I stopped listening, so I think everybody heard it here first. Jen Cease is calling Denny Bouanga to St. Louis City. Did I get that right?
He's amazing. I mean, the guy, you've seen it, Nate, he can be in the 98th minute, score a goal, and still do a flip. I mean, there's just, you know, Sungmin would be great too. I Sungmin would be amazing, but to have somebody of that caliber where you just, as the opponent, go, when they get on the ball and you go, oh no, that is what you want to have. You want to have more of those players for City. Marcel Hartl was starting to do that towards the end of the season. So maybe see, you know, he'll be back, of course, but to see players like that with quality consistently and make the other team go, God, we can't let that guy get the ball.
Jen, we appreciate you so much. As always, great to talk City with you, and I'm sure we will be visiting plenty more as the offseason continues and Corey Ray's vision for City unfolds. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Kyle.
And if it hasn't been mentioned on KMOX, I think it probably was at some point, but talking to Jen reminds me. A shout-out to Jen's daughter, Marin. Congratulations for her commitment to play soccer for the St. Louis University Billikens in the coming years. We're going to see plenty of her on the field at Herman Stadium for what has been the dominant women's soccer program in the Atlantic 10. Although this year tripped up in the A-10 semis and then, despite an RPI of 31, left out of the NCAA tournament. So that snapped a string of seven straight years the Billikens women's team had been in the NCAA tournament. The men's team is still kicking, literally and figuratively. They'll have the A-10 semis at Herman Stadium tomorrow night against Davidson, a chance to advance to next weekend's A-10 championship game. Hopefully on Thursday night we'll be able to talk to somebody. I don't know yet if it's going to be somebody from SLU Media or maybe head coach Kevin Kalish, but the plan is to have somebody Billiken's men's soccer on for Thursday evening show, because even if they were to lose, they would still have a shot at the NCAA tournament, probably in a largely similar situation to the women's team where they'd kind of be sweating it out during the selection show. But if they win, you'd think that strengthens their cause considerably. And obviously, if they win the next two games and the A-10 tournament title to go with their A-10 regular season title, they would be in the NCAA tournament guaranteed. Speaking of postseason or lack thereof, Mizzou football probably out of the college football playoff now. Probably we're headed that way anyway with a true freshman third-string quarterback. But certainly you'd think that fate is sealed after a home loss to Texas A&M, the third Mizzou defeat of the season. Came in Columbia over the weekend. We'll talk about it after this. Graybar Sports Open Line continues next. Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. The Missouri Tigers, a 38-17 loss to third-ranked Texas A&M over the weekend in Columbia. It was a third loss in the last four games for Mizzou, which will be back home for a night game this coming Saturday against Mississippi State, then at Oklahoma and at Arkansas to finish out the regular season. It's still mostly a successful season, I would say, for Missouri if they can get to their, you know, win the last three, certainly, and get to nine. Even if they finish 8-4, I think that's probably a decent season under the circumstances, which included losing, I guess, presumed backup starting quarterback Sam Horn in the opening game of the year against Central Arkansas, who was technically at the time still, I guess, the co-number one, because the position had been that he and Bo Prabula were in a yet undetermined quarterback competition going into the opening week. And then Bo Prabula gets hurt against Vanderbilt. And that's the, you know, that's the real inflection point of the season. Another one is losing to Alabama by three at home. You know, that felt like a really, really good opportunity at the kind of statement win that has eluded Missouri under Eli Drinkwitz. In fact, he's won every game against unranked teams the last few years, and he's yet to beat a ranked team. So, I mean, it's just Missouri has, that's been the story for Mizzou, right? It's not breaking any ground to say that Missouri has almost entirely won the games they're supposed to win, including finding a way to win an ugly game against Auburn. Then the week after the Alabama game on the road in overtime, placed the Jordan Hare, that's you know, kind of underrated right now in terms of how difficult it is to play, because Auburn has just been sort of a dysfunctional program over the last now quite a few years. But that's a really difficult place to play, especially a night game that it was, especially when fans are really engaged in the game the way they were, because Auburn was in it with a chance to win. And Missouri pulling that game out, Missouri getting so close against a really good Alabama team and then pulling out a game that oftentimes they would have found a way to lose in the past on the road against Auburn in overtime, that combination gave me a lot of hope going into Vanderbilt. I was really disappointed by the loss to Alabama, but I was still very hopeful. At that point, a one-loss team playing in what is not an especially difficult environment compared to other places in the SEC in Nashville against Vandy. And I felt that was a very winnable game, and I still feel it probably was. And unfortunately for Missouri, the play when Bo Prabula got hurt just totally changed the complexion of that game and of their season, both because Bo Prabula didn't score on fourth down and goal from the one, which would have put Missouri on top of that game, but more importantly, because he dislocated his ankle and is out for the remainder of at least the regular season. And as a result, it put Matt Zoller's third string true freshman in the game to start for Mizzou for presumably the rest of the year. And of course, then even he almost got Mizzou in the end zone on that Hail Mary at the end of the game that came up inches short and would have pushed the game into overtime had they made the extra point. Or maybe Eli Drinkwitz would have said, forget it, let's go for two and try to get 3 yards to win the game right here. This is a season of bad luck, I think, for Mizzou. The Alabama game, they did it to themselves a little bit. The Unsportsmanlike penalty in the first quarter. Some of the, you know, Bo Prabula's bad decisions throwing the football. But I think this is a year where if Mizzou is healthier, and in particular just if Bo Prabula stays healthy the whole year, they easily could have beaten Vanderbilt or Alabama or both. And you really only had to beat one. If you win one of those games, you have to win the games you're supposed to win, and then you have to win two out of four against the ranked opponents they've played or will play. A&M, Vanderbilt, Alabama, Oklahoma. If Mizzou goes 10-2 with losses, the only two losses to two of those four teams, they're in the playoff. As it looks now, they've lost to all three of the ranked teams, and they're likely to lose to all four because Oklahoma on the road is going to be a massive challenge for a young guy like Matt Zollers. And unfortunately, it's going to be a lost season. I think there are overreactions with respect to Eli Drinkwitz's job. I understand Missouri fans are very frustrated. It makes perfect sense for Missouri fans to be very frustrated. And I don't think anybody's calling for his job per se. Maybe some people are on the fringes. But there are folks who are overreacting to this. The fact that he lost even handily at home to A&M with a third-string true freshman quarterback making his first career start means almost nothing to me. In fact, the fact that they were as competitive as they were, the fact that Vegas had them as only 6.5-point underdogs going into the game, that's shocking to me. And that speaks volumes about the talent and depth on this roster compared to Missouri teams of old and what Eli Drinkwitz has done to overhaul Missouri's program from a talent and depth standpoint to make it capable of standing up against big-name programs in the SEC. That wouldn't have been true before. So nothing that's happened this year has made me think Eli Drinkwitz can't be a guy for Missouri who takes them at least one more step to getting into the playoff. Now, if Eli Drinkwitz leaves this offseason, which I think is more likely than not, because of the volume of high-profile jobs that are out there, and because at least one, if not two or three of those schools are going to swing and miss at their top guys, right? I mean, there's only one Lane Kiffin to go around. Suppose now people are saying maybe even the Giants could be interested in him because of the Jackson Dart angle and their familiarity with each other from Ole Miss. There's only one Lane Kiffin, and he might well stay at Ole Miss. So could Eli Drinkwitz be a second or third choice at Florida? Could he be a second or third choice at LSU? Probably not. I think John Summerall would be above him in their power rankings, and he'll probably take the job. Could he be a second or third or fourth choice at Penn State, which is in kind of a sketchy situation now? If they thought they were going to get Kurt Cignetti, that's not happening. So where are they going now after firing a coach they felt couldn't win the big one, but had been pretty successful? Hiring a guy in Eli Drinkwitz who can't win a ranked game doesn't seem like an answer that's going to make Penn State very happy. So where do they go? But I think it's more likely than not that Eli Drinkwitz positions himself for those jobs, and that if he wants one, he can probably get one. I could see the argument that if he takes one, Mizzou fans aren't crying too much if they think they can go find somebody, because the applicant pool would be totally different, much better now than it was when Eli Drinkwitz got it, because from an infrastructure standpoint, talent standpoint, every way, this job is much better than it was. But in general, I think anybody pretending that you take anything about who Eli Drinkwitz is as a coach out of losing to Texas A&M with a third-string quarterback probably is a bit of a prisoner of the moment and needs to be waiting for the offseason when the recruiting wins start to pour in again and the hope is restored again about what Mizzou can be next year and beyond, even as SEC schedules get more and more and more difficult with a 9-game conference season. We got to take a break. We'll be back to wrap up after this on KMOX. Wrap it up, Gray Bar Sports Open Line on this Tuesday evening on KMOX. Nate Gatter with you in for Matt Pauly. Kevin Wheeler will be with you for Sports Open Line tomorrow evening. I'll be back on Thursday. Plan is for Matt Pauly to be back with you next week. We spoke to Josh Schertz, head coach of the St. Louis Billikens men's basketball team. During the first hour, we talked to Amy Markscores about the St. Louis Blues, Jen Cease about St. Louis City. In our second hour, we touched on Mizzou football. We touched on the Cleveland Guardians, two relief pitchers who were indicted in federal court in the Eastern District of New York. We talked about a whole lot of things going on around St. Louis sports, and you can go back and hear any of that on the free Odyssey app where the podcasts are of this show and any of our other shows. You can also listen live to all of our content here on that free Odyssey app. We appreciate all of you for being with us. Nate Gatter, my producer, Kyle Sixta. We will be back with you. Don't forget tomorrow evening with Kevin Wheeler for Rush Hour Sports at 5, Sports Open Line at 6. Thank you to all of our guests and to you for tuning in. This has been Graybar Sports Open Line. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the voice of St. Louis, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.